Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
Taoiseach and Minister for Foreign Affairs Micheál Martin has secured government approval for Ireland to intervene in two cases currently before the International Court of Justice at the Cabinet's first meeting since the general election. Let's take a listen to some of what the Taoiseach had to say now.
Fundamentally, Ireland is asking the court to broaden its interpretation of genocide within the Genocide Convention, particularly on the area of intent. And this is legally complex, but the important point we're making here is that in broadening the interpretation, we believe it encompasses what has happened in Gaza in particular, in terms of both the intent and in terms of the impact of the horrific Israeli attacks on the Palestinian people within Gaza in particular.
Well, we're joined now in studio by human rights barrister Keelan Gallagher and also on the line by Fianna Fáil MEP Barry Andrews, and you're both very welcome to the programme. Barry Andrews, I might come to yourself first, and your reaction to the government's approval for intervention in the ICJ case.
Well, I'm very pleased that this has come to pass. It is something that I've been calling for since the original finding of the ICJ back in January and the more recent decisions. So I think it will hopefully mean that the crime of genocide is understood more broadly, so that some of the actions of the Israeli Defense Forces could fall within the provisions of the convention, and that eventually there can be accountability for what has happened since the beginning of the bombardment of Gaza.
And do you think if the Irish government is successful and the issue of, or the definition of genocide is broadened by the ICJ and Israel is found to be conducting genocide in Gaza officially, do you think that'll make any difference?
I think Israel does react to pressure, and the other argument is simply to give up hope altogether and to do nothing. And you know, there's always an excuse to do nothing. But I think by broadening the interpretation of what constitutes the commission of genocide, will, I think, hopefully lead. We heard the arguments on both sides. You will remember in early January, it was an Irish lawyer acting for the government of South Africa, and we heard the arguments from the Israeli representatives as well, that sought to narrow the definition to avoid a responsibility for what's happened. So I think the intervention by the Irish government on this issue should be helpful to clarify exactly what the terms of the convention actually mean for state parties. And as I say, hopefully bring accountability for those who carried out these appalling attacks on Gaza over the last few months.
And Keelan, can I ask you, Ireland is not joining either side in the case. This is a declaration of intervention. How significant is it in your view?
So my view is that it's very significant and I welcome it. So under Article 63 of the statute, there is the ability for any party to the convention to intervene in order to assist with issues of definition. And this is the right time to do it because it comes just after, in October, South Africa filed its memorial, its 750-page submission and its evidence. And Ireland has taken a number of weeks to review its position and now to file this declaration of intervention. The court will, of course, have to decide whether or not it's admissible. That's the next stage. It's important to say that Ireland is seeking to intervene in two cases concerning the definition of genocide. And the first one, of course, is the South Africa against Israel case. The second is the Gambia against Myanmar about the Rohingya Muslim genocide. And in both of those cases, what we've seen is real leadership on the crime of crimes by South Africa and by the Gambia. And it is quite right that Ireland and many other states are now stepping up to be counted rather than the onus falling only on the Gambia and on South Africa to take these critically important issues forward.
Is there any stronger action we could have taken? I mean, for example, could we have joined South Africa in the case, and would that have been seen as a stronger action?
So the mechanism now at the stage that we're at is this Article 63 route, and that's the right route given the stage that we're now at. Of course, there are other steps that Ireland could take in relation to both cases in a range of other places, because the International Court of Justice is only one part of the accountability mechanisms internationally. I mean, for example, you'll have seen recently the decision in relation to the International Criminal Court about the arrest warrants for both Israeli and Hamas leaders, for example. There's a range of other mechanisms, but Given where we are now with the ICJ in both of these cases, I welcome the decision that's been taken today.
And Barry Andrews, can I ask you about timing? Because you say you've been calling for this since January. Now, Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald has a press release out today saying she welcomes this decision by Ireland, but she says it is a belated decision that should have been done months ago. And by the sounds of it, you agree with her.
Well, I think it followed the course of what had to be done. I think the intention to intervene was announced some time ago, and the legal consequences of seeking that permission from the cabinet had to be considered fully. We wanted to make sure that we did it something that was an intervention that was actually positive and wasn't create any legal uncertainty. So I don't think the timing is something that I would be too worried about. I think it was done at the appropriate time. I think we also have to take further steps now, by the way. Mm-hmm. I think we need to put pressure on the European Union to finally make a statement on the findings of the ICJ thus far. I mean, we have the vast majority of 17 judges of the highest court in the world finding that there is a plausible case of a breach of some certain articles of the Convention on Genocide. So we need to put pressure on the European Union, the European Commission, to take a position on this in the same way that they took such a clear position on the ICJ case against Russia for their involvement in the war in Ukraine.
And you agree with that, Keelan?
I do agree with that. And also, I just add one other specific point. One of the issues of particular concern to me, given my expertise on safety of journalists, has been the targeting and the unprecedented scale of killing of journalists within Gaza. Even on the most conservative figures from the Committee to Protect Journalists, which have been issued just in the last week, it's 137 people who've died in the conflict between the occupied territories Gaza and Lebanon, the vast, vast majority of whom are Palestinian journalists. And there's a real issue here, because I agree with the concerns expressed by CPJ and also by the International Federation of Journalists, that by targeting journalists, what's happening is it's preventing the world seeing what is happening. So it's targeting journalists as civilians, which is a war crime and unacceptable in any event. But also it's having a knock-on impact on what the world can see about what's happening. And that's a specific issue. Ireland's shown leadership on the issue of media freedom in other contexts. And I think that's a specific topic which I would hope they will pick up in their declaration of intervention.
All right, Barry Andrews, I want to move on to Syria, because several European countries announced earlier this week, including Ireland, that they plan to suspend asylum applications from Syrian citizens following the overthrow of Bashar al-Assad. Was that the wrong decision, do you think, by our government?
Look, I mean, there's arguments, Sarah, for it. I think it just sends out a terribly negative image of European governments, that the first thing they've done after this joyous moment when finally the Assad dynasty has been overthrown, that the first thing that we do as European governments is to pull the ladder up on applications for international protection, to put a pause on those asylum applications. I think what we should be doing is taking a much more positive role. I've met lots of Syrians today here in Brussels. I've met Kurds, I've met people from the humanitarian organizations that work there. And one of the things we could be doing very usefully is to ensure that those who have already been recognized as refugees in Ireland but are not naturalized, ensuring that they could go back to Syria without running the risk of losing their refugee status. And that's something that I've heard from Syrians in Germany and across the European Union, because we want these people who had to flee Syria, let's be clear, because they wanted a democratic Syria, we want them to be part of the next chapter of Syria's development. We want them to be part of reconciliation and reconstruction. So we shouldn't punish those people who now want to go back to Syria by saying, look, it really imperils their current refugee status.
Okay.
I think that's something that we should be doing
very positive. So the idea there being to give them the chance to start their life again in Syria, but if things deteriorate in that country, to allow them to return. Is that the idea?
Exactly. There's no incentive for them to go back right now. If we are saying to them, well, look, the nature of refugee status is you can't go back to your country of origin.
Yeah.
So it's you know, people will say, well, you know, they're not really refugees if they can go back. But I think if we're really serious about a new chapter for Syria, the diaspora will play a critical role. The diaspora are the people that had to flee because they supported the idea of a democratic Syria.
Keelan?
Yeah, I just agree with the concern about the immediate response from many European governments. I mean, we saw Austria, for example, immediately talking about potentially deporting 40,000 Syrians and reviewing people who'd achieved status in the last 5 years. That was their first thought. And there's a really powerful piece today in the New York Times by one of my former clients, a Syrian blogger called Zeyna Erheim. And she describes in it just the total shock over the last number of days. And she describes her third life starting, because she had her first life growing up in Syria, her second life when she settled in Europe, in the UK in 2017. And now suddenly she's into this third life. And in that moment where suddenly everyone's worlds are upside down and where some of them are finding out about loved ones who were dismembered or doused in acid or tortured or are alive and being released from the prisons, they're now also having to grapple with what is their new home country doing and are they going to be subject to deportation and kicked out? It's outrageous.
Okay, Keelan, I want to ask you about a separate issue because I know you act for the staff of Iran International, which is a TV station, and there's been an update on the case of Iran International TV journalist Pouria Zarati, who was stabbed in London earlier this year. What can you tell us about that?
Of course, so this is a new tactic which unfortunately a number of governments around the world are now using. So instead of just targeting individuals who are academics, human rights defenders, journalists within their own borders, they're trying to use the long arm of the state to silence people around the world, wherever they may be. And we saw that with China, with the shadow Chinese police station on Talbot Street, for example. So that is what Iran does. And Iran has decided to target everyone who works for Iran International. That's hundreds and hundreds of people worldwide. And on Good Friday this year, my client Pouria Zarati was stabbed in broad daylight in London by three individuals who flew into Heathrow Airport, arrived at his home where he was about to go on his regular trip to the studio to make his programme. He was stabbed and then they flew immediately back out on a plane before the police had even engaged with what had happened. Deliberately happened on a bank holiday. Now, that was not a surprise when it happened, but obviously accountability for that kind of attack is very difficult to achieve. And I'm very pleased to say that this week, two men have been prosecuted. They're in Romania and their extradition is being sought. I should say there's a specific Irish angle to this issue too, because there's hundreds of journalists working for Iran International, based mainly but not exclusively in London and in Washington, D.C. They all have a death sentence hanging over their head because they're journalists doing their job. And five of them are Irish nationals.
All right. Well, it's very interesting to hear that update. And we'll keep an eye on that story for sure.